Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. From Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 13, Text 43. Vikalpam juhuyas chitto tamanas yarta vibrame mano vaikarike hutva tamayayam juhut yanu. Vikation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The mental concoction of discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which should then be invested in the false ego. The false ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. Purport. This verse describes how a yogi can become free from material affection. Because of material attraction, a karmi cannot see himself. Jnanis can discriminate between matter and spirit, but the yogis, the best of whom are the bhakti yogis, want to return home, back to Godhead. The karmis are completely an illusion. The jnanis are neither an illusion nor in positive knowledge. But the yogis, especially the bhakti yogis, are completely on the spiritual platform. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 26, mam chayo vyabhacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati chaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down under any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and then comes to the level of Brahman. Thus, a devotee's position is secure. A devotee is at once elevated to the spiritual platform. Others, such as jnanis and hatha yogis, can only gradually ascend to the spiritual platform by nullifying their material discrimination on the platform of psychology and nullifying the false ego by which one thinks, I am this body, a product of matter. One must merge the false ego into the total material energy and merge the total material energy into the supreme energetic. This is the process of becoming free from material attraction. So when Krishna was in Dwarka, at one point he became very, very concerned about the situation of the gopis. He knew that, you know, when he left Vrindavan, since that the time he left Vrindavan, they were feeling intense separation, and it was very difficult for them to even maintain their lives. So out of concern for them, he made an arrangement to send Uddhava to Vrindavan with a message, and so that hopefully that would offer them some solace. So Uddhava, he was Krishna's cousin, brother, and he looked almost like Krishna. So he felt very honored that, you know, to receive this instruction from Krishna. And after some meeting with Krishna, receiving the message from Krishna, and like that, he set off to Vrindavan. And when he arrived there, he was observing the situation. He was observing the behavior of the gopis, and he was able to immediately notice that, wow, they're just like totally absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, so much so that they're even imitating his behavior. You know, they were reenacting the pastimes that they saw Krishna perform, and that they some of which they shared with Krishna while he was there in Vrindavan. And in this way, they were practically almost oblivious to, you know, their external circumstances and reality. They were just 24/7, as the expression goes, absorbed in thought of Krishna. So Uddhava, you know, when he saw this, he concluded that really, actually, I have nothing to teach these people. I mean, because, you know, part of delivering the message of Krishna was he was, you know, in addition to that, he would be instructing them a little bit, you know, how to deal with these feelings of separation and like that. But when he observed their very elevated platform of his ecstatic love for Krishna, he came to the conclusion, well, I have nothing to teach them. They are already so much more advanced than me. So, you know, but anyway, I was given this service by Krishna, so I have to execute my duty. So in the same way, I'm feeling like that. I'm observing how nicely all the devotees here perform their sadhana very seriously, and the wonderful Vaishnava etiquette that's being observed here by all the members of the community. And it's very inspiring to see how everybody is so nicely imbibed the spirit of their guru, Radhanath Maharaj, for many of you, who's, I know that's something that's very important to him. So in this way, I feel like I have much more to learn from everybody here than I do to instruct. But since it's the duty of devotees, like, you know, who've been around for a while, to every now and then have to sit here and give a class, so I'm here. Like Uddhava, he was, he just thought, well, I have to perform my duty, so in the same way. And I just request all of you, please give me your blessings that I could say something worthwhile. Thank you. Hare Krishna. So, as far as this verse goes now, so Prabhupada makes the point here that he says, because of material attraction, a karmi cannot see himself. We'll take this purport sentence by sentence. And there's a very nice verse from the Prema Vivarta, which can give us some insight into what's being said there by Prabhupada. It goes, Krishna Bahir Mukahaya Boga Vanchakare Nikatishta Maya Tare Japatiya Dare. As soon as one becomes inimical to Krishna and desires sense gratification, he is immediately struck down by the illusory energy of the Lord. So this is describing the situation of the karmis. You know, they're desiring sense gratification, and they're inimical to Krishna in the sense that they've given up the service of Krishna, and as a result, they become struck down by the illusory energy. That striking down comes in the form of they're attracted. They're attracted by the material energy. And in this way, they become controlled and ultimately cheated. Actually, it's interesting to look at the exact words here. Krishna Bahir Mukh, which Prabhupada translates in the prose translation and even in the word for word as inimical to Krishna. But a very exact literal translation of those words, Bahir Mukha, means to turn your head away, to turn your face away. So that's, literally what the living entity is doing. He's turning his face away from Krishna in the sense that he's, misusing his little bit minute independence to reject the service of Krishna. In this way, it's as if he's turning his face away from Krishna. So Prabhupada says here, due to this material, and as soon as one turns his face away from Krishna, then Maya is there. We have to be the living entity. The nature of the living entity is that he's anandamaya bhyasat. He's always hankering after pleasure. So as soon as the living entity gives up the pure devotional service of Krishna, he's got to look for pleasure elsewhere. And by the arrangement of Krishna, Maya is right there to offer that illusion of, well, you can be happy, but with material sense gratification. So because the living entity is rejecting the service of Krishna, he becomes attracted by Maya and looks for happiness in the form of sense gratification. And because of this, he, as Prabhupada says here, he cannot see himself. He can't see Krishna and he can't see himself. Well, he can't see himself because, just like Prabhupada would sometimes give this example, that in the dark of night, when it's pitch black out, you can't see yourself. You can't see what's around you or understand what's around you. And that's it. You're just in the dark. But when the sun starts to come up, when the sun starts to rise, then immediately you can see the sun. And when basically, even before the sun actually, goes up above the horizon, you can see yourself and you can understand your surroundings and, what's going on. So it's like that, as it was because of turning away from Krishna, not seeing Krishna, one also loses sight of oneself. One also becomes, loses the proper understanding of one's real identity as the eternal servant of Krishna. That's kind of goes, it's part and parcel of that misuse of free will. The obvious thing, you can't expect to turn your head away from somebody, your face away from somebody, and see them at the same time. Not unless you have eyes coming out the back of your head, which we don't. So that's my explanation of that point, why the karmis cannot see themselves, because they've turned away from Krishna. And when you can't see Krishna, you can't see yourself. Just like when the sun's not out, you can't see the sun, you can't see yourself, you can't understand or see anything around you. So Prabhupada goes on to say here that jnanis can discriminate between matter and spirit. And he says, but the yogis, the best of whom are the bhakti yogis, want to return home back to Godhead. So the jnanis, they have a little bit of a qualification, you know, and that they're able to discriminate between matter and spirit. And that's okay. You know, that's something. It's better than nothing, right? So they deserve some credit. And Krishna actually gives them a little bit of credit. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, Krishna says, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yadati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschid mam veti tatvataha, that of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And then he goes on to say, of course, that and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. But the point being that it's even jnanis are rare, out of many thousands among men. So if you work that out mathematically, let's just say many thousands, let's just, for argument's sake, say many means 10. Okay, so out of 10,000, right, one may endeavor for perfection. So if you work that out as a percentage, that's 0.01%. It's not a very big figure. In other words, out of 1,000 people, out of many thousand, out of 10,000 people, even one person, only one person is able to discriminate between matter and spirit. Not a heck of a lot when you stop and think about it. But so even jnanis are, you know, as I said, they have some little qualification. But unfortunately, it's not enough qualification, because just being able to discriminate between matter and spirit, as Prabhupada goes on to say in the coming sentence here, it's not sufficient, because they don't have positive knowledge. And as they don't have actually knowledge of how to be engaged in devotional service, and as a result, their position is kamala jalamala jivana talamala. It's like there's a song by Govinda. Goes bajahure mana srinandananda. Probably all you're familiar with it. But in one part of that song, he says that this human form of life is like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. It's in a very precarious position. You know, that drop of water, because the nature of that lotus leaf is it's very smooth and shiny, you know, and even if there's just a little bit of a breeze, that drop can just slip right off. So in the same way, the jnani's position is like that. You know, they try to establish themselves in a position of equanimity, you know, free from sense gratification, but because they don't have support of devotional service, at any moment they can fall back down into sense gratification. And that's described very nicely in another verse from the 4th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It goes, Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhakcha karma sayam grahitam udgaratayanti shanta tad Vanna rikta matayo yatayo pirudha shrota ganas tadadanam bhajavasudevam. So this verse explains that the devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord, they can very easily overcome the hard knotted desires for fruitive activities. But this is very difficult for the non-devotees, and Prabhupada specifies in this translation the jnanis and the yogis. It says, although they are trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, they cannot do so. Therefore, this is Lord Rishabh, the Kumaras instructing King Prithu. They say, therefore, you are advised to engage in devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. So from this verse, we get information that the jnanis and the yogis, they're trying to stop the waves of sense gratification. But because they don't properly understand the process, you know, which is to engage in devotional service, they're unsuccessful. It's just a matter of time, and jnanis and yogis are going to succumb and once again be engaged in the process of sense gratification. So, so from this we should understand, and Prabhupada points it out here in this purport, he says that he talks about the jnanis and then he talks about the yogis, but then he mentions that the best of the yogis are the bhakti yogis, because they want to return home back to Godhead. And this is also, Prabhupada didn't quote the verse here, but It's also confirmed in the, nicely in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I think it's the last verse. Krishna says, Yoginam api sarvesham mad gate nantaratmana shralavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. That of all yogis, you know, he who abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the best, the highest of all. So that's Krishna's opinion, which he expresses very nicely in the end of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that of all these different aspiring transcendentalists, the bhakti yoga is the best. That's who is Krishna is most pleased by. So then it goes on to say here, from that we should understand that how rare and special devotees are. As I quoted that verse, Manushanam Sahasreshu, and it goes, out of many thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. But then Krishna goes on to say in the very next breath, and of those who have achieved perfection, and of those, Prabhupada explains that perfection there means understanding that we're not the body. See, so out of those who have achieved perfection, goes on to say, hardly one knows me in truth. See, so out of many ganis, you know, which are 1 in 10,000, you know, as I said, according to that, if we take that hypothetical number of, you know, 10, meaning referring to many thousands, out of many of those, only one is a devotee. One becomes a devotee. So devotees are very rare. Devotees are very rare. There's a very nice verse a little bit further on in that seventh chapter. Krishna says, Bahunam janmanam ante yanavam mam papajate Vasudeva Savarmiti, Sahamahatma Sadurlabaha. Krishna says, after many births and deaths, one who is actually in knowledge, Jnanavam Mam Prapajante, he surrenders unto me, Vasudeva Savarmiti, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is, Sahamahatma Sadurlabaha. Such a great soul is very, very rare. So Krishna is acknowledging the exalted position there of you know, a bhakti yogi or a devotee. They're very rare, you know. Somebody, a jnani, who's rare to start off with, only becomes a devotee after many, many births. How many births that is, we don't know, but it's very rare. So the logical follow-on from that is that devotees should be offered great respect. You know, they're very rare, exalted personalities, and they should be offered great respect. And that means not just advanced devotees or pure devotees, but devotees on all different levels. Actually, there's one purport in the Bhagavatam someplace where Prabhupada expresses that Krishna is even very pleased with the neophyte devotees. You know, so we should offer all respects to devotees on all different levels. And actually, how to do that is not guesswork. Guidelines are given in the Bhagavatam. For instance, in the fourth canto, part one, there's that section where Narada Muni is instructing Dhruva Maharaj, you know, after he leaves home and goes out to the forest. So at one point in their conversation, Narada Muni gives Dhruva Maharaj some instructions on how to relate to personalities on different levels. Dhruva Maharaj rejected these instructions because he didn't think, you know, they were suitable for him because he has such a different nature, you know. But anyway, Narada Muni gave him some good instructions. He said that if a person is inferior to you, then you should be sympathetic or compassionate towards them. And practically speaking for us, you know, that means preaching. You preach to that person. Or try to help that person engage in devotional service, right? Well, if it's a human being, you can, you know, preach, present the philosophy to him. And it's even a creature, that, you know, in a lower status than human life, give them prasadam. But that should be our attitude towards living entities that we could see are in a lower existential position than ourselves. We should try to share Krishna consciousness with them in some way, shape, or form. There's that very nice verse in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Vijivanaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavihastani, Sune Chaiva Swapake Cha, Pandita Samadarshana, that the humble sage sees by virtue of true knowledge the learned and gentle Brahman, the dog, the elephant, the dog eater, like that. You know, he can understand that they're all not the material body, they're all spirit soul, part and parcels of Krishna. And so he tries to help all of them progress in their, you know, devotional service, basically. And he knows how to do that according to time, place, and circumstance. So anyway, so getting back to this instruction by Narada Muni, we're supposed to be compassionate towards those who are less advanced than us by preaching to them, helping them engage in devotional service. Those who are on the same level, we should make friends with them. You know, there's a nice guideline for that in the Nectar of Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami's book. It goes, Dadati Pratigranati Guyamakyati Prichati Bunkte Bonjayate Chaiva Sadviri Pratilakshanam. That Dadati Pratigranati, that offering gifts and receiving gifts, Guyamakyati Prichati, revealing one's mind in confidence and inquiring confidentially, Bunkte Bonjayate Chaiva, offering Prashalam and accepting Prashalam. These are the six symptoms of love shared between one devotee and another. So that's the way, you know, that's the way to develop a friendship. That's the, you know, the bona fide Shastric way. You know, you do those things and then you'll develop a very nice friendship with another devotee on the spiritual platform, which will be very meaningful and real. And then for those who are more advanced than us, it's described further on in the Nectar of Instruction, I don't know the Sanskrit for that verse, how we should render service to them. And the way you could tell if somebody's an advanced devotee, there's descriptions, well, throughout. I mean, right there in the Bhagavad Gita, there's that verse, Satatam kirtayantomam yatantas chadrudavrataha namasyantas chimam bhakcha nitya yuktu pashate. That always, Satatam kirtayantomam, Prabhupada used to particularly quote that line, always chanting my glories. Always chanting my glories. That's probably the foremost symptom of an Uttama Adhikari or an advanced devotee. Always chanting Krishna's glories. In other words, and Prabhupada in the Nectar of Instruction points out that the advanced devotee, the Uttama Adhikari, he's always thinking or always endeavoring how to spread the Krishna conscious movement. So if we could see somebody's in that category, we should try to serve them. Serving them primarily, well, you could serve them by offering all the Vaishnava etiquette and also by trying to assist them in their service because, you know, their service is to try to spread the Krishna conscious movement, so we should try to assist them in that way. And well, here's a point I kind of probably should have made a couple minutes ago, but I'll throw it in there. About how the devotee's position is much more secure than that of the gyanis or the yogis. Prabhupada sometimes would give the analogy of the gyani or the yogi. They're like a monkey, a baby monkey. The way a baby monkey gets around is that it hops on its mother's back and it grabs on and it just tries to, it just holds on, and the mother jumps around from one place to the other, from one tree to the other, and the baby monkey just hangs on, and in that way the monkey, baby monkey, gets around. So that's not a bad mode of transportation. But Prabhupada would, you know, he'd give another example. He'd say, but the kitten, the baby kitten, the mother cat comes along and grabs the baby kitten by the back of the neck and carries the baby kitten around like that. So Prabhupada would ask, whose position is more secure? Well, the correct answer is the baby kitten. Because the little baby monkey, you know, it's just a little baby. If it's not strong enough and it can't hold on, it'll fall, and it could, you know, get badly hurt. See, because it's doing it on its own strength. You know, it knows its ability to kind of be transported around is dependent upon its own strength. Whereas the kitten, it's being transported around. It's dependent upon the strength of its, you know, grown-up mother, which is much more reliable. So that's the position of the devotee. You know, the gyanis and the yogis, they're trying to grab on to Krishna and hang on, whereas you know, that's something. It's better than nothing, once again. But the position of the devotees is Krishna being pleased with the devotees' service and their attitude and their love and their affection. You know, Krishna is grabbing them. You know, he's just like Prabhupada in the original Bhagavad Gita. There used to be this picture of a devotee in the ocean of birth and death. And there's this beautiful picture of Lord Vishnu coming down on Garuda. And he was... And Krishna would grab the seeker of the devotee and pull him out, you know, of the ocean of birth and death by the seeker, just pulling him up. And I guess for the Matajis, just from the hair. But, you know, the idea being that the devotee's not dependent upon his own prowess, his own ability. He's taken back home, back to Godhead by Krishna's mercy. And once again, that's because Krishna has special affection for his devotees. And that's described very nicely in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Samoham Savabhuteshu Name Dvestostina Priya Ye Bhajante Tumam Bhakcha Mai Te Teshu Chapiham. He says, I envy no one. Samoham, I'm equal to everyone. I'm not envious of anyone. You know, Samoham Savabhuteshu Name Dvestostina Priya. Yeah, just all three. But Ye Bhajante Tumam Bhakcha. But somebody who engages in devotional service, Krishna says, I am a friend. I am in them. And they are a friend to me, like that. Knows Krishna has special affection for the bhaktas, right? And it's understandable, just to give like a little example or an analogy. Just imagine a situation. You're trying to do some philanthropic work, okay? So who are you going to feel more favorably inclined to, okay? Here you are. You're really genuinely and sincerely trying to do some philanthropic work. You know, just out of the goodness of your heart, you're trying to do something to help other people, help the poor people or sick people or whatever, okay? So who are you going to feel, you know, more better about? People who are trying to criticize your work? People who are just acknowledging your work, but, you know, just giving it lip service, but just they're acknowledging, they're expressing some verbal appreciation? Or people who are kind of like, you know, aware of your work, they're rolling up, and they're coming forward to offer you help? Obviously, the people in the third category, you know? You're going to be upset with the people who are trying to criticize, and you'll just feel kind of neutral. But the people who are prepared, you know, actually coming forward and saying, hey, this is wonderful what you're doing. I mean, is there some way and I can help you? Can I assist you? Then, you know, your heart's going to go out to those people, and you're going to feel, well, yeah, there is, actually. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your, you know, your interest in my work, and thank you, you know, like that. So this is that same situation. You know, Krishna, the devotees are interested in Krishna. So it's just natural. It's understandable that Krishna is going to be interested back in them. You know, yayata mam papa jante tam stataiva pajami aham. So, oh, and one last point about, I have to backtrack a little bit here, about respecting the devotees. In terms of like advanced devotees, as I was preparing the class, I was reflecting. Actually, I was thinking about different leaders within our movement, and some of whom actually, well, the point is they deserve all the respect they're getting and even more. Because I was just reflecting that, you know, some of our leaders like Radhanath Maharaj and Shivaram Maharaj and, you know, Bibi Govinda Swami, I mean, just those off the top of my head, I was just remembering a few. I was thinking, you know, these are people that they're not losers. You know, like, I don't know if you have that expression here in India, but in America they have an expression, you're a loser. Loser is somebody who's got really bad karma. You know, even they try to make it material life and it just doesn't work out. They just, you know, they don't, like, for whatever reason, they just can't get it together to be successful or anything. But, you know, they don't have the opulences. No wealth, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, renunciation. It just, even materially, they can't really make it. Well, the point I'm making is that a lot of the leaders are in our movement, they're not in that category. You know, these are people who, they came from, you know, they were intelligent. They have material, a lot of, you know, good qualifications materially, well-built, good-looking, intelligent, you know, from, you know, but wealthy backgrounds like that. But, so notice they had full facility and have to this day full facility for sense gratification should they so desire to pursue that path. But they're not, you know, it's an achievement. You know, that's something. Prabhupada once was giving a class, and he was talking about how meaningful the renunciation of Lord Chaitanya was, because, you know, Lord Chaitanya, once again, he wasn't some loser. You know, Lord Chaitanya, his wife was the goddess of fortune. He had a very wonderful, affectionate mother. Even, you know, as a young man, he was famous as a great scholar throughout the Nabadweep area. You know, so he had respect. He had respect of the masses. He had everything. He had everything going for him materially, but he gave all that up. He gave all that up just so he could be more easily accessible to the fallen conditioned souls, just so he could show mercy to the fallen conditioned souls of the, you know, of the Kali Yuga at that time. So Prabhupada was making the point that this is really, you know, when you have nothing and you know, to give up nothing, that's not such a big deal. But when you have like some fabulous, incredible situation and to give all that up, you know, to renounce all that, to take up the mission like that, that's very meaningful. So in that sense, I think, you know, these advanced devotees, they deserve all the respect and assistance they and more that they're already receiving, because you know, it's not an easy thing. It's a very difficult thing that what they're doing there. So moving on here. So our goal is to be engaged, is to actually, well, our goal is to follow in the footsteps of these advanced devotees and, you know, try to become like them. Actually, this morning I had an interesting thing occurred to me. I was going for a japa walk with Radha Patipabhu, and we were up there in Malabar Hills. And, you know, so I'm new here. I don't really know the area very well. But I worked out that, you know, there's this big building here behind the guest house, and then there's this other one just in front of the temple. So I use those as kind of like landmarks. And despite the fact that, you know, I really don't know the ins and outs of the local streets, but I can keep from getting lost by looking up. You know, I just have to find those landmarks. I have something to look up to. And because I have something to look up to, pretty much, you know, I could be wherever I am within a mile's radius of here, I'll be able to find my way back because there it is. There's the beacon, you know, there's that big, you know, 30-story building right behind the guest house or that other one right in front here of the temple. So in the same way, I was thinking how the analogy came to me, just like in the Vedic culture, you know, you have the acharyas. You know, the acharyas, acharya means teacher by example. What is it, practically speaking, what does that mean? They're people we can look up to. You see, just like, you know, we couldn't get lost because I had the building to look up to. In the same way, in the Vedic culture, people were able to progress towards the goal of pure devotional service. Why? Because they had the acharyas to look up to. You know, they're like the Empire State Building among men. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna addresses Arjuna, O tiger among men. You know, because back in those days, you know, the tiger was very powerful, still is. So, but, you know, like the modern day version of that, Empire State Building among devotees. You know, it's like there's certain devotees who they're just like beacons of light. And, you know, and they're just like, they're examples, they're exemplars. They're, you know, and we just have to look towards them and we'll always be able to understand what is the right thing for us to do in any particular time, place, and circumstance, you know, how we can go forward in our own lives. And this principle is confirmed by Krishna in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. There's that famous verse, yad yada charati shrestas tat tadaveta rojana. So yat pramanam kurute lokas tadanavartate. That whatever example is set by the great people, you know, yad yada charati shrestas, the shrestas, common men follow in their footsteps. And whatever standard they set by exemplary acts, the whole world pursues. So that principle holds true, you know, here in human society. And we're very fortunate to be members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and that we have Krishna has given us the intelligence to see who are the real acharyas in human society. It's not the professional athletes. It's not the the rock stars or the movie stars or something like that. It's our very own leaders in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, personalities like Radhanath Maharaj and Gopal Krishna Raj, and the list goes on and on and on. You know, these are the real acharyas. And just by following them, you know, our lives will become perfect. Actually, Prabhupada would also emphasize a lot the importance of the association of devotees, right? And it's a very powerful principle because there is a Prabhupada, in one purport in the Bhagavatam, he pointed out that the living entity is by nature social, you know, social, in the sense that we're affected, we're influenced, we're concerned, it's just natural, about what other people think. And as you've probably all observed, there's a very natural tendency within human society to want to behave in such a way, people always want to behave in such a way that they're not going to be criticized, you know, but rather that they're going to be appreciated. You see, these days that's referred to as being politically correct. You know, you have that expression here in India. I know they use it a lot in America now. You know, oh, that's not politically correct. You know, it's not, for instance, you know, it's not politically correct to say that women are less intelligent than men or something like that. I mean, whether it's the case or not, you know, of course, and I don't want to get into that actually. But the point being that it's certainly not a politically correct thing to do, you know, to say in America or so many other examples like that. So, but we're very fortunate because when you come into this, we can dovetail that tendency in the Krishna Consciousness Movement because, you know, when you're trying to be politically correct among the association of the devotees, you know, what happens? Well, you wind up doing all sorts of things that are very good for you. You know, like in order to be politically correct, when you're in the association of the devotees, you know, you're very polite, you're very respectful, you're very humble. You know, you offer service to other devotees. You try to make sure that you don't step all over anybody. You know, you observe Vaishnava etiquette very carefully, but that's good, you see? So in other words, the same thing, which is, you know, keeping people in bondage in the material world, that same principle of, you know, wanting to be politically correct, that's very same thing. When you're in the correct association, the association of the devotees, that very same thing is a source of elevation. I remember, you know, before you're devotees, when you're hanging out with your friends, in order to be politically correct with them, you know, you might have to smoke, drink, take drugs like that, because that's what everybody else was doing. And you just felt, well, I guess, like, you know, I need to do that in order to be, you know, part of the group, you see? So that same principle works against you. But I think Narada Muni gives an instruction like that. I think it's the fifth chapter of the Bhagavatam. He tells Vyasadeva, says, "O good soul, does not a thing applied therapeutically cure a disease which is caused by the very same thing?" See? So this principle of wanting to be, favorably associating with other personalities, that principle, when applied to devotional service, is the cause of our liberation rather than our bondage, that very same thing. So, okay, another point is, so our goal is to achieve pure devotional service, and of course, you know, I mentioned how one very important thing, part of the process or aspect of the process in doing that is to have that association, that inspirational association of more advanced devotees. And basically it boils down to three things: guru, sadhu, and shastra. So shastra, we're aware of. That's something that's very important to help us progress towards pure devotional service. And guru and sadhu. And the point I want to make here is that, you know, we only have one diksha guru, but we can have many shiksha gurus. Shiksha guru is instructioning, you know, instructor. Shiksha means instruction, so an instructional spiritual master. And, you know, you can make advancement in spiritual life by properly associating with the shiksha guru. In other words, there's, you know, that famous verse in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Tadvidi Paripatena Paripashnena Sevaya Upadekshanti Te Gyanam Gyaninas Tatvadarshana. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. So that, it doesn't only apply to one's diksha guru. That principle holds true with any advanced devotee. You know, any devotee who you can understand, this devotee is, I have so much to learn from this devotee, you know, just approach him in that way. You know, inquire submissively, render service, and then upadekshanti te gyanam. That devotee, when he's pleased by your submissive attitude, service attitude, and your inquiries, then that devotee will, you know, instruct you or associate with you in such a way that Krishna's pleased by that exchange, you see, when he sees that type of exchange going on between the devotees. So Krishna will empower that devotee to enlighten you further in your devotional service. That's how it works. And say, because Krishna likes to see that type of an exchange between, you know, devotees. And even, you know, we see even in the material world it kind of works like that, not in the transcendental way, but the best way to learn something is not by, what's the expression? Trial and error. Trial and error, you know, is that's the method of learning for, I won't say fools, because at least you're trying to learn, but that's the most difficult and the most unproductive way of learning, trial and error. Say you want to learn anything, to play the piano, to become a carpenter, anything, you know, computers, whatever. The best way to do that is just find somebody who's expert and establish a favorable relationship with that person. And then when they like you, they'll show you all the, you know, the ins and outs, the tricks of the trade, so to speak, and you'll learn very quickly and much more effectively than what you could have if you were just struggling to learn something by trial and error, which is a very inefficient way of learning, generally, which ends in just frustration and giving up the attempt altogether. So that's an important point there. And as far as Oh, yeah, just getting back to this point of how if you associate properly with advanced devotees, then, you know, it very much facilitates your own advancement. And as I mentioned, the reason for that is because Krishna is very pleased, because the devotees are very dear to Krishna. Devotees on every different level are dear to Krishna. And if somebody's more advanced, that's just another way of saying he's more dear to Krishna. So Krishna is very pleased when he sees his devotees being respected. Actually, there's a statement by Uddhava. It's Krishna instructing Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, Madbhakta Pujyadikam, which means that Adhikar means to acquire the qualification. So Madbhakta Pujyadikam means if one worships a devotee, he acquires the qualification to be engaged in pure devotional service. So that's that verse. And then there's another nice verse along the same lines. Once Lord Shiva was associating with his wife, and she asked him, what's the highest form of worship? So Lord Shiva thought about it for a second, then he said, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param, which means of all forms of worship, the worship of Lord Vishnu is the highest. But then he went on to say, but Tasmat Padatanam Devi Tadiyanam Samacharam. But even higher than that is the worship of that which is in relation to Vishnu. In other words, Prabhupada explains, that's referring to devotee. So the highest form of worship is worship of Lord Vishnu, and even higher than the worship of Lord Vishnu is the worship of a pure devotee. And so Prabhupada used to explain that there's different... Essentially, he used to break it down to there's two basic ways of associating with a devotee. One is Bapu, and the other is Vani. And Bapu refers to associating with a devotee in person, you know, having the physical presence of a devotee. And when that opportunity is available, then we should take that opportunity to observe the Vaishnava etiquette, you know, of towards a devotee. Which, of course, it's very nicely being done here. I'll like take this opportunity to commend all the devotees here of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir, of, once again, of following in the footsteps of their spiritual master, Radhanath Maharaj, and very nicely executing the different principles of Vaishnava etiquette. I cannot remember in my whole life when I'm so impressed by the kind of welcome that I personally myself experienced and I could see as being extended to not just me, but, you know, all different devotees when they come. The welcome, the reception, the care and respect that all the different devotees are given while they're here, and the nice service attitude, and there's the level of service and assistance which is offered to guests, from all different backgrounds. It's actually very wonderful. And one devotee told me, I actually was commenting upon this to a devotee about a week ago. Maybe, might have been my guard brother, Trinakarta, and he made the point. He said, "Yeah, Radhanath Maharaj told the devotees. He said it's not the classes which bring people back. He said it's the reception, it's the respect, and the service. You know those things, and it's just the way people are treated when they come. That's a very, very big part of of making devotees pretty much." It's actually, there's a word like in the English, testament. It's a testament to our, our real devotional service, how we behave towards other, devotees and non-devotees is the true testament to our own devotional, how much our own devotional qualities have developed. So that's there. And the other form of associating was Vani, which means, Prabhupada sometimes referred to it as preceptorial or instruction. And Prabhupada actually said on most occasions that of the two, Vani and Vapu, Vani is more important. As Prabhupada, although to say something is more important is not to say that something else is not important. It's very important to observe the Vaishnava etiquette. It's very important. But even what Prabhupada considered even more important was that one actually make the commitment to dedicate one's life towards assisting the spiritual master in his mission of establishing Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Prabhupada, that's what's meant by associating by Vani. You know, that's what Prabhupada placed the most emphasis on, that one should have that conviction that, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, and that the way I express that is by taking shelter of my spiritual master and assisting him in his mission. And so that's the other way of associating with an advanced devotees or pure devotees. So, wrapping it up here. So we're just making the point about, you know, of those two ways of associating. Vani is more important, and basically, you know, it means trying to assist the spiritual master in his mission. As we all know, the mission of the spiritual master is to try to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Prabhupada actually said on one occasion, towards the end of his stay with us, and he said, actually, I want to spread Krishna consciousness everywhere immediately. You know, that's sort of like, if you have to give a caption, you know, to Prabhupada's life, that sort of encapsulates his mentality. That was his desire. He was, you know, that kind of an intense desire. He wanted to see Krishna consciousness spread everywhere immediately. Right? So, understanding that, you know, we should try to preach. That's what this, you know, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya is all about. You know, it's where Gaustiyanandis, we're not Bhajanandis. You know, everybody knows the difference. Bhajanandi is mostly concerned with his own spiritual upliftment. And that's good. You know, it's good to be concerned about with one's own spiritual welfare. But Prabhupada would always, right from the very early days of the movement, actually one of the first Bhagavad Gita classes Prabhupada was given, you know, if right back, even before 26 Second Avenue, even when he was speaking up there on, when he was on, what was it, 86th Street and Columbus Avenue, you know, before he even moved downtown, when he used to give those Monday, Wednesday, and Friday Bhagavad Gita classes in that little room there. So he was talking on the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter, text 11. So he just got, you know, he just got finished telling these people, maybe for the first time they've ever heard it, how they're not the body. And practically in the next breath, he was explaining how, okay, so now we should all become, you know, preachers of Krishna consciousness, field workers, and try to share this with other people. So, you know, it's like, it wasn't like, you know, Prabhupada was, his mood wasn't that you have to become like a very, very advanced devotee before you attempt to preach. No, it's just, it's right there from the beginning. You know, it's kind of like right there, it's part and parcel of being a devotee, just like you chant 16 rounds, follow the four principles. That's like beginner stuff, you know. So in the same way, we should have that mentality that preaching is also is part of the beginning program. You know, it's not to say that you don't develop to different levels of preaching, of course, but it should be there right from the beginning. It's not something that we shouldn't have the mentality that, well, that's something I'll do when I become more advanced. No, that's how you become advanced. That's how you become advanced. And, you know, Lord Chaitanya, once again, that instruction is coming also from Lord Chaitanya. When he met that Brahmin Korma, and that Brahmin wanted to, he was so inspired by Lord Chaitanya's association that he wanted to renounce his family, and he had a very nice family situation, and just basically take sannyas and just travel around with Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, actually, he gave him this instruction at that time. He said, Yadi deke tadi kaha Krishna upadesh. Amada Agyaya Guru Hana Tade Desh. He discouraged him. And basically the instruction was, he says, no, wherever you go, whoever you meet, just share with them the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita as presented by Krishna. In this way, become a spiritual master and deliver everybody in your land here. You know, deliver all the people that you're coming in contact with. So by saying that, Lord Chaitanya was making the point that more important than taking sannyas or becoming renounced, more important than that is to become a preacher. You know, somebody who's committing themselves to the activity of trying to share Krishna consciousness with other people. You know, actually, another little reference to support that. Back in when Prabhupada was still around, there was one devotee. He was a book distributor, and he was a very good book distributor. And at one point, I can't remember exactly how the conversation went, but they were presenting that Prabhupada, he should be sannyas, you know, he should be sannyas. But in order for him to do that service, he was always wearing Western clothes, and, you know, and Prabhupada said, no, it might interfere with his service. And, you know, the devotees were kind of like pushing the point a little bit. No, but he's so qualified, and he's such, you know, such a good devotee. And Prabhupada said, anyway, don't worry, it's okay. He's doing more than all of you combined. You know, his Prabhupada was, you know, once again, he was, same point, that he, this devotee was, he was the leading book distributor in the world at that time, and he was kind of like the leader of all the airport party in America. And Prabhupada considered what he was doing, even though he was a brahmachari, he wasn't a sannyasi, he considered that his service was more important. It was more important for him to stay a brahmachari and distribute great numbers of books than it was for him to formally accept sannyas, which may, there was, you know, affect his service because of all the different restrictions involved when you take sannyas. So once again, that point is there. And, you know, sometimes somebody might feel that, I'd like to preach, but I'm not qualified. You know, sometimes that, like, sort of, misgiving is there, and that's something which keeps us from, you know, moving out on this instruction of preaching. But my understanding of that is you are qualified. And, well, I'll qualify my statement. If you're chanting 16 rounds and you're following the four aggregative principles and you're coming to class and you're reading Prabhupada's books, please, just don't, you're qualified. That's qualification right there. That's not to say that you know, that makes you qualified to become the next Jagat Guru of the whole world, but you're certainly qualified to go out and approach conditioned souls and try to share Krishna consciousness with them. That's sufficient qualification. You know, that, you know, sincere effort to chant your rounds, follow the principles, read the books. Just go out and repeat. You know, you don't have to, it's nothing fancy is required. Just keep it real simple. Whatever you know, whatever you've heard, just share that much with people. And that will be very nice, effective preaching. Prabhupada was very pleased by this, the daughter of Shama Sundar. He was here recently, Shama Sundar, the Prabhupada disciple. Her name was Saraswati. She was just a little girl. She was 3 or 4 years old. She used to go up to people, "Do you know who Krishna is?" And they would say no. And then she'd go, "Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Like that. She would do that. And when that was reported back to Prabhupada, Prabhupada was so pleased to hear that. She said, "See, this is a little girl, 3 or 4 years old. She doesn't know, you know, but she's a big preacher. Our Saraswati is a big preacher," he would say. Because, you know, she just had the conviction, had the enthusiasm. Actually, that was Prabhupada's criterion for when he chose the different, you know, before he departed, when he chose who was going to be the you know, spiritual masters, at least the initial 11, his criterion was those who took the most risk for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, those who are the most bold and enthusiastic preachers, those are the devotees he selected. So, and another thing you should understand is that, you know, along these same lines of, you know, feeling self-conscious or reluctant, you're not qualified, this is an emergency. Okay, you know, maybe if this was the Vedic culture, you know, if this was the time of, you know, shortly after the departure of Krishna from the planet or something like that, okay, you know, maybe we're not so qualified, you know, we don't know so many shlokas, or we don't know the philosophy that well, we can't present all the arguments to defeat the Mayavadis and the impersonalists or whatever, you know, but like, when it's an emergency, you just got to come forward and do whatever you can do. And Prabhupada would give that example. Prabhupada would give the example of, like, just like you'd say, just like during time of war, you know. During time of war, they have the draft, you know. I mean, like, I remember just before, well, I wasn't alive, but I remember being told about before World War II, you know, before America, when it, you know, decided it had to go to war when it was bombed by Japan, then that was it. Every able-bodied man was called up, and you know, these people didn't know anything about fighting. All they just were given a little bit of training and given a gun and told, okay, go out there. And, you know, so even, you know, farm boys who only heard about, maybe saw a movie of a war or something like that, the next thing they knew, they were out there in, you know, someplace in Europe or someplace in the South Pacific, and they were military men. But Prabhupada makes the point that actually by doing that, you know, because they took that, they accepted that position, they took that risk, and they became national heroes. You know, those who went out there and fought, didn't get killed, and didn't run away, when they came back, they were national heroes. You know, they went from just insignificant farm boys to, you know, national heroes. They had, you know, big parades, you know, celebrating their return at the end of the war like that. So Prabhupada would make this, in the same, he'd make an analogy. In the same way, Prabhupada would say to be very quickly recognized by Krishna, this is the shortcut process. You know, actually, he was talking with Prabhupada Vishnuswami in 1976 in Vrindavan. He was giving this example. So this is it. You know, it's because it's an emergency. This is an emergency. Kali Yuga is, you know, very powerful, and people are in, you know, so much illusion, and it's getting worse. So in a time of an emergency, you just have to, you do the needful. You know, even if you're not like the next Sukadev Goswami or something like that, it doesn't matter. Just whatever you got, you know, whatever energy you have, whatever intelligence you have, whatever knowledge you have, just get out there and do the best you can, and that will be very much appreciated by Krishna. And one last point, if you're already doing that, you know, there's some of you here are already preachers and you're already doing that, and you're not experiencing a lot of, you know, because it's very difficult, and sometimes you feel like, you know, I'm voluntarily accepting all this inconvenience to do this, and it's very difficult, and I don't know if it's appreciated. You know, sometimes you come back and you might feel, well, you know, here's devotees who aren't doing that. It's so much easier, and you know, they're getting the same prashanam as I'm getting. They get the same respect I'm getting, and you know, you might feel like, well, you know, God, I'm putting myself out so much, but what do I have to show for it? Don't worry. Even if it's not superficially appreciated by devotees, which it will be, it's just be patient. But you can understand that it's appreciated by Krishna at every moment. All our activities are being observed. You know, nothing we're doing is going in vain. Everything we're doing is being observed by our spiritual master and all the members of the Parampara disciplic succession, all the predecessor acharyas. You know, they're aware. Krishna is within our heart. And he knows exactly, you know, how sincerely we're trying to take up the mission of the spiritual master and preach Krishna consciousness, and he'll reciprocate. Krishna's reciprocating within our heart like that, if nothing else. So, you know, don't be discouraged by that. If you're already trying to preach and you're not kind of getting the kind of encouragement that you need, it's okay. Just keep going and depend on Krishna. Krishna will... is reciprocating or is aware of all our sincere efforts, and in due course of time will experience that, you know, Krishna's appreciation in the form of making, you know, very solid advancement in devotional service, getting a taste for chanting, getting more realization about the philosophy, and developing all the proper devotional qualities for advancing, you know, people advancing in devotional service. That will all be there. And that's the form Krishna's reciprocation will take. So, this is the last point. And this is just going back to that point I made about how, you know, it's very inspiring to see how nicely this, you know, this temple, this community has developed. I mean, it's actually, and I'm sure those of you who are guests here, those, you know, who are not regulars like myself, will all, I'm speaking for everybody, I'm sure, when I say that it's a very nice experience to come here to Chaupati, to Radha Gopinath Mandir. It's a beautiful temple. I remember when I came here, I thought, well, you know, so like, where do you pay obeisances first? I mean, the temple, the deities in the temple are beautiful. There's all these different beautiful displays around the place, all these nice murtis of the disciplic succession out there. Even when you just walk in the front gate there, there's all these different dioramas of the different incarnations of Krishna. And, you know, it's immediately, you really get the feeling that you're in a very holy spiritual place, and that, you know, and that's just the beginning. And then when you meet the devotees, the experience becomes even more rich and wonderful because of the wonderful, you know, Vaishnav achar, the wonderful behavior of all the devotees. And it's right across the board. That was my observation, that it's not just, you know, one or two devotees. It's every different interaction I had from when I went from one department to another, I just met another devotee who was like, you know, the same kind of behavior, the same kind of qualities, the same kind of nice devotional behavior like that. It was very, very, very inspiring. And we know that, of course, you know, Radhanath Maharaj is the inspiration for that, because, you know, we've had the good fortune of having his association a little bit when he comes to America, and, you know, we could see everybody hankers for his association. I had the good fortune of being, of driving him in a little camper van I have from Los Angeles down to San Diego on one part of his trip. And we stopped off at a few different places on the way down there. And it was like, it was amazing for me to see that, you know, everybody was always hankering for his association. They considered, you know, their relationship with him as being like a very important relationship for them. And that was like children, you know, like very young age children, guru coolies, old timers like myself, you know, devotees who are kind of like early Prabhupada disciples who are no longer in the mainstream, everybody right across the board, you know, all different levels. Everybody was really appreciating him because they could, I guess they could, well, they could sense, they could feel how he appreciates them. You know, he's seeing the spiritual quality in them. So anyway, so to get to the point, one morning when we woke up, just we both woke up, my wife and I, and she said to me, right away, she asked me this question. She said, hey, didn't there used to be a book, something, Perfect Questions, something? I said, yeah. I said, there used to be a paperback book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. And then she went, we just woke up. She said, yeah. She said, somebody should write a book, Perfect Guru, Perfect Disciples. And when she said that, I was just, you know, didn't know what to say. I just thought about it. I said, yeah, actually, you're right. I said, you got it spot on, as the expression goes. That's exactly right. There should be a book. Somebody should write a book about this community, and it could be titled Perfect Guru, Perfect Disciples. So anyway, thank you for being, looks like I went out a little bit extra, but thank you for being such a patient and attentive audience, I'm leaving tomorrow, but I'd like to thank all the resident devotees for making this such a wonderful experience, something I'll remember for the rest of my life. And thank you. Hare Krishna. Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.